Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are and should be proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. Co-host Skip is going to interview me. Since June 2nd is the 17th anniversary of this show, June 3rd is the 60th anniversary of my graduation from West Point, and June 4th is my 83rd birthday. Of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. So, Skip, it's in your hands, bro. Take it away.
All right. The colonel says the sergeant is in control. Until he tells me I'm not in control, right?
Amen.
All right. Well, Colonel, we want to talk about your military career. And I thought it'd be interesting to discuss all the awards you received for heroism. It's worthy of note that most troops who serve in close combat have no heroism awards at all. Some might have one or two, and occasionally somebody might have three. But Colonel, you had seven military combat awards. That's just awesome.
Well, I didn't really want to get any, but yeah.
Hey, when the Army says go, you go, right?
Yeah, and I wish the Army had told the other people to stop shooting, but they didn't.
So. That's right. Well, Colonel, our military has a lot of awards for heroism or valor. There are three awards that are only given for valor in combat against an enemy. The top one is the Medal of Honor. Number two is the Distinguished Service Cross. That's what the Army calls it. The Navy calls it the Navy Cross. The Air Force Cross. And number three award is the Silver Star. Oh, and there's one more award for heroism, not involving enemy contact. The Army calls their award the Soldier's Medal. The Navy and Air Force, they've got similar ones. And there are many awards that can be awarded for heroism or meritorious service or achievement. A good example of that one would be the Bronze Star. All right, now, Colonel, you graduated from West Point in 1964. You went to Airborne and Ranger School, reported for duty at Fort Carson in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And then shortly after that, our nation decided to begin sending combat units to Vietnam. We've been sending advisors there for several years. And you then volunteered for duty in Vietnam and reported in October 1965. You were made a rifle platoon leader in the 1st Infantry Division. And then shortly after that, you earned your first Bronze Star for valor. So, Colonel, tell us in your own words about that first Bronze Star for valor.
Well, I was a rifle platoon leader, and my platoon really clicked well. We really worked well together. And our company was moving through some very thick jungle, and my platoon was leading the company. We've been looking for the bad guys for a couple of days and not finding them. The company commander called a halt, so we platoon leaders moved back to join him. And he told us that we clearly hadn't found the enemy, and we were very near the clearing where their choppers were going to pick us up. We were maybe 1,000, 2,000 meters away from them. And then all of a sudden, there were bullets flying, grenades all over the place. I mean, we didn't know where anything was coming from, but it was dangerous. So I ran back to my platoon, of course. Since we had stopped, my platoon sergeant had the platoon get down into fighting positions. Reasonable thing. We're in an unsecure area. Then he sent some guys out to probe out what was near us. I mean, you couldn't only see maybe 10 yards or something. So he was doing exactly what he should have done. So he started sending guys out just 5 or 10, 15 yards beyond what they could see. So we knew it was there. Well, one of those guys found the enemy camp. The one we've been looking for. They didn't know we were there either. So suddenly everybody was surprised. My guys ran back. The bad guys started shooting because they didn't even know what direction to shoot, nor did we. The captain told me to deploy my platoon to engage the enemy while he moved the rest of the company to the pickup zone. Then we would fall back to get to the pickup zone. And then he could call in artillery fire on the enemy, and then we'd get picked up by the choppers and go home. Well, I did get back to my platoon, and I did figure out what was going on and figure out which way to deploy people. I don't remember anything else after that. yes, we must have engaged the enemy. We must have rotated back one squad at a time to keep firing at the enemy. I don't remember anything else until we were back in the pickup zone waiting for the helicopters to come in. And I do remember asking the company commander why no artillery was following yet, because that's what we were waiting for. And he said he'd called it in. He didn't know why it was coming either. So that time was a blank. I did receive the Bronze Star for valor for whatever I did. It's blank.
Well,
I
mean, Colonel, the Army doesn't make mistakes, so clearly you deserved it.
Well, we could discuss about that a long time.
Well, Colonel, one of the things that struck me while you were telling the story there, you said, you know, you couldn't see any farther than 30 yards. And it's like to someone from Iowa or Kansas, you would tell them that and you'd go, what does he mean? Because they're used to like the plains. And even here in Michigan, you can see 100 or 200 or 300 yards. But, you know, I've been to the jungle before, and, you know, not in combat. But in one of the things that struck me in the jungle is you can't see because there's so much foliage and undergrowth there. You can't see the sky sometimes because of the canopy. You can't see more than 10 yards out ahead of you. And it's like, I can see why you could just stumble onto the enemy without even knowing that they were there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, literally, there are some places where I couldn't see 10 feet.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we're looking and we were moving pretty quietly so that we weren't making a lot of noise. Yeah, well, that was interesting.
Well, and then after 6 months as a rifle platoon leader in combat, you were told that you were going to be an aide-de-camp to a new general. The general, he was new in the country. He had his own Huey helicopter, and you had two pilots and two door gunners. And what did you do during that part of your duty, Colonel?
Well, virtually every day we were out observing combat or talking to the troops. One day we were watching a large battle from some distance, and we saw some bad guys running through the woods, apparently fleeing the battle. We weren't really close to anything, but we could see down through the trees. And we were flying circles. We came by the next time in the same area, I don't know, 5 minutes, whatever, later, and we saw one guy running, and he was headed towards a grass hut. Well, the general said he wanted a prisoner and told the pilot to land as near to that hut as he could. So we landed in a totally insecure area, I'm guessing 50 yards from that hut. Well, no question who was going to go run there. It wasn't the general and it wasn't the pilot. So I buckled on my helmet, grabbed my M16 rifle, and sprinted to the hut. I burst through the door and found one very surprised bad guy leaning against the wall, sitting on the floor. I grabbed him by the collar, the back of his shirt, and sprinted back to the chopper. He was sort of flapping behind me. You know, I probably weighed 180 pounds. He probably weighed 100 pounds. As we approached the chopper, I threw him ahead of me onto the steel floor of the helicopter and then landed on top of him because I had to be careful. I had no idea if he was armed or anything. Well, turns out he wasn't. For that, I later received the Army's lowest award for valor, the Army Commendation Medal with a V for valor.
So there's a lot of different ways to get these medals, but the pattern is, hey, you got to be in combat and people have to shoot at you and you might die, you know, before you get that medal.
Yeah, I had no idea what I was going to run into, but hey, and again, it's not something you think about. All of a sudden, there's no question who's supposed to do it. You are. Go do it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, hey, we've got a lot more to share on this, folks. But we'll be right back. This is Sergeant Skip Coriel on Frontlines of Freedom. It's time to do some knee bends. Go halfway down each time, do 40, and do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. We will be right back.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to Veterans Programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
For over 10 years, Concerned Veterans for America has been fighting for better health care options for veterans.
Thanks to our thousands of activists around the country, we've been able to expand options for veterans who use the VA for their care.
But there is more to be done, and you can help. We need voices just like yours to call on Congress to continue reforming the VA and empowering veterans with more choice over their care.
Learn more and join the movement by visiting cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing to interview Colonel Gillum about the Valor Awards he received in Vietnam. All right, Colonel, what happened to you next?
Well, again, as an aide, we were watching a very big battle going on near the Cambodian border. And that border was a very wide river. I don't remember, 50 yards or maybe 100 yards wide. And after a while, the general decided that the enemy reinforcements were likely coming across that river to participate in the battle. So he told our pilot to fly down the river. Well, at first, the banks of the river were, you know, minor bushes and stuff. Then all of a sudden, there were trees. And then there were really tall trees. And then those really tall trees, branches met from each side of the river. So it was a tunnel. I really wasn't excited about flying into the tunnel, but he didn't ask me. And once we were in that tunnel, we started getting fired on by the enemy on both sides of the river. We couldn't turn around. We didn't know how long that tunnel ran, hundreds of miles. Well, the pilots just kept on moving, and the door gunners did their job. The general had his seat faced out the right side of the helicopter, so he was shooting out that door. So I went to the other side, and I shot out that door. We both had M16s and 45 pistols. It seemed like 10 hours, but it was more likely 10 minutes. And then suddenly the pilots found a break in the trees so we could get out. The chopper had a whole lot of holes in it. For that, we all received the Distinguished Flying Cross for Valor. I'm not sure what else I could have done, but shoot, there was no place to run and hide. But that was the next Valor Award, and That chopper had a lot of holes in it, but not enough to shoot it down. We were lucky.
Well, the important thing, there were no holes in you. That's well, yeah, always a plus, right?
Yeah. Well, good point. Really good point. That was scary, but fast.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that really strikes me there, well, a couple of things strike me there. The first one is not a whole lot of ground pounders, infantry grunts, get the opportunity to get the Distinguished Flying Cross for Valor. And it's almost like, you know, God had a plan, and he wanted you to get the Distinguished Flying Cross. So he paired you up with this lunatic general and said, you know, fly through this tunnel. We're going to get you the Distinguished Flying Cross. But Colonel, do you have any idea? Did this general, did he survive the war? Because he seems very gung-ho to me.
Yeah, he did. He was in World War II. He was a tank commander and a very distinguished one. He missed the Korean War because he was in the Pentagon, and he wasn't going to miss this war. Uh-huh. And he retired as a three-star general. To say he was aggressive, it would be an understatement. So,
yeah, he was like a general search and destroy is what he was like. But hey, you know, one thing that I'm seeing throughout all of this, Colonel, is God had his hand on you, and you had a protective angel over your shoulder the whole time you were in Vietnam, Colonel.
Or maybe three protective angels.
Okay.
Well, yes. All right, well, you're quite right. Yes, you are.
Well, Colonel, what was the next battle then?
Okay. Well, it wasn't really a battle. We had just taken off for the day, and the thing I always did when we took off, I kept maps in the airplane, and I upgraded all the maps. I'd gathered all the data. So we've been in the air about 15 minutes, headed to whatever place the general wanted to go, when all of a sudden the chopper shook like a somebody like it was a vibrator. I mean, we literally shook for, I don't know, it seemed like an hour. It's probably 15 seconds. And then something threw past us like at Mach 3. Well, I hit the microphone and asked the pilot, Sam, what was that? He said, our tail rotor. Okay. It come off as a mechanical failure, wasn't shot off. Well, we had to get to the ground fast because the helicopter blades is spinning around is what keeps you in the air and keeps you moving. But the engine that turns the blade will also turn the helicopter spinning under the blade unless there's a tail rotor to keep it from doing that. Well, the pilot was able to keep it doing pretty well until we slowed down to land. He found a rice paddy to settle down in, and it was a bit wet. We hit it, and as we slowed down, we started spinning. And when the chopper hit the ground, I remember hitting the ground, and it rolled onto the left side. Well, the pilots cut the engine, and there was a lot of aviation fuel everywhere. I was sitting behind a radio when we hit, and I apparently hit my head on the radio. The next thing I remember, so the helicopter is laying on its left side, and all my stuff, my helmet, my weapon, everything was under my seat, which would have then fallen to the ground. The next thing I remember is I had my helmet on, my rifle in my hand, and I was standing on top of the right side of the helicopter, the side that was not in the ground, which is where the general was normally looking out. So I was helping him get out of his seat so that he could get off the helicopter. So that couldn't have taken more than a minute or two, but I have no recollection of that. Well, the door gunner on the left side, he wasn't hurt, but he was trapped in his seat under the plane. He couldn't get out. Well, the pilots and the other door gunner were focused on rescuing the crewman, and the general helped him. Well, I did help some with the rescue, but I also noticed that we were in a very, very insecure area. So I ran circles around the plane much of the time, helping the crew dig out the gunner part of the time. We did finally get him out after, I don't know, 15 minutes or so. And a few minutes later, the rescue party showed up. And since working in a crash area covered with fuel is dangerous, we all received the Soldier's Medal for heroism not involving contact with the enemy. That was scary. Because I smacked my head, they made me spend the next day in the hospital to make sure. I told them the most damage was probably done to the radio where my head hit it, but all was well.
Well, you know, I'm sure the door gunner that you helped rescue definitely appreciated that one, even though I guess he didn't get an award for that. He did get to keep his life, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, and it did because, I mean, who knows what would have happened if all of us had been hurt or we couldn't get him out. I mean, yeah.
So what happened next, Colonel?
Well, that was it for my first tour. So I came home with four awards for valor, which looked really cool because I married my sweetheart and I was in full dress uniform for that. We went on a honeymoon. We reported to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, the home of the 101st Airborne Division. And shortly after that, I was promoted to the rank of captain and given command of an airborne rifle company. This is the dream job for all infantry captains. I was in heaven. I was newly married to my wonderful wife and had the best job in the Army. That was in January of 1967. That December, the whole division deployed to Vietnam, just in time for the Tet Offensive. We were located near the walled city of Hue in northern South Vietnam when the big fighting began at the end of January. So our first big fight reminded me something of World War II. We conducted a battalion assault across an area about the size of two football fields. We were headed south towards the city of Hue. My company was Company C, was on the left. B Company was on the right. Another company in reserve. Machine guns, mortars, lots of noise and smoke. Again, I remember getting my company ready to attack. I don't remember the actual attack. The next thing I remember is walking through the wooded area that we had just cleared where the enemy had been. I remember seeing the bodies of a few of our troops and some enemy bodies. I then led a platoon to clear out the rest of the area to our left. And for whatever I did during the attack, I received another Bronze Star for valor.
Well, Denny, that's a recurring theme too. You know, sometimes under all that stress, you just don't remember everything that happens. And man, that's just incredible. Well, Colonel, there's more to share on this. We'll be right back. This is Sergeant Skip Coriel on Front Lines of Freedom. It's time to do some deep knee bends. Go halfway down each time, do 40, and do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. We will be right back.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
Welcome back to Front Lines of Freedom. We are continuing to interview Colonel Gillum about the Valor Awards he received in Vietnam. All right, Colonel. Man, you've had so much already, but that's not it. There's more, isn't there?
Yeah. You know, once you're in it, you're in it. And my second tour, for about the first 4 months, we were in heavy fighting all the time. And sometimes it blurs together. Anyway, all the fighting that I was in was basically around Hue, which is a northern city, a very famous walled city in the history of the area. It's where the enemy, one of the areas the enemy hit really hard for the Tet 68 offensive. There were a lot of rivers leading to the sea around Hue. It was obviously on a seacoast. And most of the rivers were really wide and had dirt roads running along each bank. Reasonable. And every a couple of miles along the river, there would be a village. Some of them were for fishing. Some of them had rice paddies. And whether it was 2 miles or 4 miles between. But the villages were there, and the bad guys had basically taken them all over. So most of the villagers were gone. I don't know if they had fled or were killed by the enemy. We spent a couple of weeks moving down those rivers, driving out the enemy. As there was a lot of vegetation inland from the dirt road that ran along the river, I moved with one platoon leading, another platoon right behind them, and a third moving through and clearing the vegetation off to our side. They often got behind a ways because they had cruddier stuff to move through. So on one occasion, my lead platoon made contact with the enemy, and the platoon leader deployed his platoon online to gauge the enemy, exactly what he should have done. I was moving right behind his platoon. So I moved inland and moved with them. And when they settled into a fighting position, I was deciding how to deploy my other two platoons. Then I saw a machine gun bunker that was engaging my guys. This was inland a little bit. So I assumed there must be another bunker, probably nearer the road. That was probably what engaged my platoon the first time. So I also saw a small depression, sort of like a dry stream bed. And it ran right near, sort of alongside the enemy's machine gun bunker that I could see. I decided to attack the bunker. I could have gone back and gotten my other platoons and deployed them, but that would have taken 20 or 30 minutes while that machine gun bunker was killing my guys. So I just got down in that depression and crawled along it until I was very near the bunker. Then, well, I always carried two grenades with me, so I got ready to throw one of my hand grenades. And it occurred to me that never in my life had I ever thrown anything, much less a hand grenade, while I was lying on the ground. Well, I don't know why I remember that, but I do. Well, I threw it, and it came pretty close. I was okay with that. Well, so I threw the second one. It came close, too. Then I was wondering what I was going to do now. I was armed only with a .45 pistol. I'd forgotten both my radio operators would be following me. And all of a sudden, somebody tapped on my foot. Well, it was my radio operator who was handing me up his hand grenades. So I threw his two hand grenades. Both came close. At that point, I think there were four bad guys who had been in that machine gun bunker. And I guess the grenades I threw made them think that whatever it was getting closer, and it scared the heck. So they jumped up and ran out of the machine gun bunker. The door was in the back of the bunker. And my platoon, the ones they'd been shooting at, shot all of them when they jumped up to run out. So I guess the bad guys thought my grenades were mortar rounds or something, that they'd eventually get hit. I was lucky there wasn't another bunker that I didn't see. And for that, I got another Bronze Star with a V for Valor.
Well, Colonel, I think I would have given you the Silver Star for that one. I mean, that is like so, it's almost like a movie, the way you describe it. I mean, I can see it happening in my mind while you're doing that. Of course, if it had been me, I would have only needed one grenade, but, you know, yeah. I'm just a sergeant.
Well, but, you know, the other side of that is, I think it was my first sergeant who recommended me for this. He was on the other side of the company. He didn't see what I did. I don't know who referred me. I'm guessing it was him. So he saw me do some things. He didn't see everything. That's one of the, it's like a story of any battle. Each person sees something different.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know,
that's my
it's
story.
Interesting. This time you remembered all of the details.
Yes.
Whereas before, you know, in some of the other ones, you just don't.
Well, it's true. I don't know where the switch is in my brain.
Well. All right. Well, okay, that's award number six. What's number seven?
Okay, basically the same situation, just a couple of days later, moving along a riverbank, same formation. Again, my elite platoon made contact with the enemy. Now, in this case, there was a big ditch between my troops and the enemy. The enemy was located on a little higher ground, you know, maybe 10 feet higher. I mean, you know, riverbanks are all basically the same level. But apparently this village had rice paddies, and they got water out of the river to fill their rice paddies in the right season. So they had this ditch dug, and I guess when they wanted water out of the river, they dug the road away for a while till the water could come through. Anyway, the road would keep going, but everything inland from the road had this big ditch, as well as a bit higher ground. So I deployed my whole company online. We could shoot at the bad guys. We couldn't see them very clearly. And this one squad had gotten across to the other side of the ditch when all the shooting started. Well, I didn't see any way that we could engage that, so I called for artillery fire. And it was crazy, and I got a call back shortly after that saying, no, there's no artillery available. Everybody else has been fighting too. But in about 20 minutes, there's three Marine fighters that were going to be coming in support, and they could give me two gun runs. Well, that was fine. I told everyone to keep shooting at the enemy. Be careful. Don't shoot too much. Don't run out of ammunition. And that basically, once the Marines checked in, I'd tell everybody, I'd say, just listen. You'll be able to hear them make their first gun run. And by the time you hear them, that they're actually over, they're already making the gun run. Then it'll take them 5 or 10 minutes to go around and make their second run. When you hear them start their second run, get out and attack, because by the time we get out of your ground position, the planes will be gone and we'll attack them. So we had a good plan. So I told everybody, we got 20 minutes, just stay down, stay covered. And a minute or two later, I got told that one of the guys in that squad that had got across the ditch was badly wounded and needed help. Well, the one luxury I allowed myself was an air mattress. Well, I had to run across a bunch of enemy fire to get over to the river, but I did. And I gave my air mattress to a medic who would blow it up so we could float this guy up the river to where they could get a dust off, a medical back helicopter to come in. And I asked the squad leader, how'd he get hit? Well, he said, this guy had, he always talked about that he always wanted to make a bare-chested grenade assault on a machine gun nest. And he had taken off all his gear and had unbuttoned his shirt and was up on one elbow taking his shirt off, which got his head above the protection area, and he got shot in the head. I'm not sure that I wanted to give up my air mattress for that, but I already had. So,
hell.
And I have no recollection of the fighters coming in. I have no recollection of making the attack. The next thing I remember is walking through the village after we had totally cleared it, looking at the destruction and observing one prisoner being interrogated. I got a silver star for that one.
Well, Colonel, you earned that one. You really did. I mean, you earned them all, but that one, that was heroic. Colonel, I have to say it. I mean, I've known you for decades, but you really, you're a hero. You've lived a hero's life. You've saved other people's lives by putting your own life into danger. And I know you would never say that, so that's why I'm saying it for you, Colonel. You're a war hero, and be humble if you want to, but Colonel, you are a war hero, and I thank you for your service.
Well, you know, I did those things without thinking about them, because that's what combat leaders are supposed to do. And that was pretty much my last big battle. There were a couple other minor ones. And shortly after that, I was moved to division headquarters to work in the division's tactical operations center, called a DTOC. I ran the night shift and spent the rest of my tour there in a very safe place.
Yeah. Well, Colonel, that is incredibly awesome. I loved hearing that, and I bet our listeners did too. So, hey, once again, thank you very much for your service in Vietnam, Colonel, and thanks for the stories.
I'm glad that to look at them in the rearview mirror, that they're, I don't want to do them again.
Absolutely. That is about it for this segment of Frontlines of Freedom. Coming up next, we're going to have military history and the self-defense report. In the meantime, get some coffee, sit down, take a break, and just cogitate about all the things that you've just heard in the last 10 minutes, because it was truly awesome. This is Skip Coriel on Frontlines of Freedom. We will be right back.
Silver has increased 24% over the past 15 months and is a solid financial investment. Silver is projected to continue its rise and is nowhere near its 2011 high of $49 an ounce. So there's still a lot of room for investment growth. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. I do some coin collecting. Universal Coin was a dealer of the year for the American Numismatic Association. It's a great place to go for coins and a great place to go to purchase silver and gold. I encourage you to go to universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I really welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first one?
Well, Colonel, Navy vet Melissa gets sick watching President Trump's trial on TV. This is clearly a political attack with no facts or logic, much less justice involved. We serve to defend a nation that does this.
Well said, Melissa. What is lacking is integrity and justice.
And Pete and Sue just want to wish Frontlines of Freedom a happy birthday.
Thank you. It's been a fun 17 years. I suspect it's going to keep that way. And now it's time for military history. Take us there, bro.
On 6 June 1918, the first large-scale battle fought by American soldiers in World War I began in Belleau Wood. In late May, the Germans had penetrated the Western Front to within 45 miles of Paris. Our forces under General John Pershing helped halt the German advance, and on June 6, Pershing ordered an attack to drive the Germans out of Belleau Wood. U.S. Marines under General James Harbord led the attack against the four German divisions, and by the end of the first day suffered over 1,000 casualties. For the next 3 weeks, the Marines, backed by Army artillery, launched many attacks into the forested area. But the Germans continually brought up reinforcements, and they attacked our forces with machine guns, artillery, and gas. Finally, on June 26, our troops prevailed, but at the cost of nearly 10,000 dead, wounded, or missing.
Ouch. And on the 4th of June, 1942, during World War II, the Battle of Midway, one of the most decisive U.S. victories against Japan, began. During the four-day sea and air battle, our outnumbered Pacific Fleet succeeded in destroying four Japanese aircraft carriers while losing only one of our own to the previously invincible Japanese Navy. In 6 months of offensives prior to Midway, the Japanese had triumphed throughout the Pacific. The U.S., however, was a growing threat, and Japanese Admiral Yamamoto sought to destroy our Pacific Fleet before it was large enough to outmatch his own. 1,000 miles northwest of Honolulu, the strategic island of Midway became the focus of his scheme to smash our resistance. His plan consisted of a feint towards Alaska, followed by an invasion of Midway. When our fleet arrived to respond to the invasion, it would be destroyed by the superior Japanese fleet waiting unseen to the west. This would eliminate our Pacific fleet and provide a forward outpost from which the Japanese could eliminate any future American threat. But our intelligence broke the Japanese naval code, and we were ready for the surprise attack. When the battle ended, Japan had lost four aircraft carriers, a cruiser, and 292 aircraft, and suffered about 2,500 casualties. We lost one carrier, one destroyer, 145 aircraft, and about 300 casualties. This brought Japan and American sea power to approximate parity and marked the turning point in the Pacific theater.
And on 6 June 1944, now known as D-Day, General Dwight Eisenhower, Supreme Commander of Allied Expeditionary Forces in World War II, implemented the massive invasion of Europe called Operation Overlord. By the first week of June 1944, Nazi Germany controlled most of Western Europe. Allied forces numbering 156,000 were poised to travel by ship or plane over the English Channel to attack the German army dug in at Normandy, France, on June 5. Eisenhower had a window of only 4 days of decent weather in which an invasion would be possible. When bad weather hit the channel on June 4, Eisenhower wrestled with the idea of postponing. Weather conditions were predicted to worsen over the next 2 weeks, and he had thousands of personnel and thousands of tons of supplies that were, in his words, hanging on the end of a limb. After a promising but cautious report from his meteorologist at 9:45 p.m. on June 5, Eisenhower told his staff, "Let's go," and attack we did. 2 days later, on June 8, after years of planning, preparation, and placating egos among his military peers, Eisenhower was able to report that the Allies had made a harrowing and deadly but ultimately successful landing on the beaches of Normandy. And, Colonel, here's something special. On 3 June 1964, our fearless host, Denny Gillum, graduated from West Point. The next day, June 4, was Second Lieutenant Gillum's 23rd birthday. Happy birthday, Denny.
You know, this getting old thing has pros and cons, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Some mornings it's like more cons than pros, but let's be optimistic.
On the 5th of June, 1967, the Six-Day War began. Israel responded to an ominous buildup of Arab forces along its borders by launching simultaneous attacks against Egypt and Syria. Jordan entered the fray, but the Arab coalition was no match for Israel's proficient armed forces. In 6 days of fighting, Israel occupied the Gaza Strip and the Sinai Peninsula of Egypt and the Golan Heights of Syria and the West Bank of the Arab sector of East Jerusalem, both previously under Jordanian rule. The UN ceasefire took effect on June 11th. The true fruits of the victory came in the claiming of the old city of Jerusalem from Jordan. The UN Security Council called for withdrawal from all of the occupied regions, but Israel declined, permanently annexing East Jerusalem and setting up a military administration in all the occupied territories. Israel let it be known that Gaza, the West Bank, the Golan Heights, and the Sinai would be returned in exchange for an Arab recognition of the right of Israel to exist and guarantees against future attacks. Arab leaders decided on a policy of no peace, no negotiations, and no recognition of Israel, and made plans to defend zealously the rights of Palestinian Arabs in the occupied territories. Egypt eventually made peace with Israel, and in 1982, the Sinai Peninsula was returned to Egypt in exchange for full diplomatic recognition. Egypt and Jordan later on gave up their respective claims to the Gaza Strip and the West Bank to the Palestinians. And that's military history for today. And now it's time for the Self-Defense Report. Take us there, bro.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat, but if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, a teenager was taken into custody after a crowd swarmed a Southern California deputy's patrol car last month. A large group of teenagers had taken over a section of roadway when the police cruiser came to intervene. The teens kicked and punched the windows repeatedly, trying to break in. When the police officer tried to exit his vehicle, the teens held the door shut. Finally, being outnumbered and unable to stop the teens, the police officer drove away with a smashed windshield.
Thanks, Colonel. This is an amazing story, but becoming more and more common in America. Even 20 years ago, something like this would have been highly unusual, but today, it's just part of the weekly news cycle. But you have to ask yourself, how did this happen, and how much worse is it going to get? Before we can answer that, let's go back 20 years in time to help us understand. According to Merriam-Webster, a flash mob is defined as a group of people summoned as by email or text message to a designated location at a specified time to perform an indicated action before dispersing. The first known use of the word flash mob was back in 2003. That's 21 years ago. Now it's interesting to note that Merriam-Webster gave us an incomplete definition. They said, people summoned to a specific location to perform an indicated action. A more honest definition would be, people summoned to a specific location to commit a crime and promote anarchy and lawlessness. Even 20 years ago, when this type of thing first happened, we called it what it really was, a group of criminals premeditating a crime. But now our society has accepted anarchy and crime to the point of redefining it to sound less harsh. 20 years ago, we'd call it a riot, and police would come in with tear gas, batons, and shields, and would clear the streets. But now, a police officer is forced to drive away without bringing the criminals to justice. And let's be honest here. Even the teen who was arrested will not be held accountable for his crimes. He'll be slapped on the wrist at best and released back out into the streets to commit more crime. This type of crime will continue to become more common so long as kids aren't punished for their crimes. We have to remember that what we allow, we teach. So ask yourself this, if it's not safe out there for the police, then how can it be safe for me and my family? So I'm going to repeat my warning one more time. America's cities are no longer safe. Don't live there. Don't go there. If you do, be vigilant and go at your own peril. And please, if you haven't yet armed and trained yourself, then please do so now while you still can. Buckle up, folks, because the ride is going to get bumpy.
I think it's already getting bumpy. You're right on, brother. Our movie of the month is The Elevator. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link and watch it for free. I'd appreciate getting your comments about the movie. It's cool. Send your comments to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, Vietnam vet Dave Hearn will discuss his service and several books, and Navy veteran Teresa Robinson will introduce us to yet another female veteran. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And now it's available in Spanish. You can purchase this book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or Amazon. Please help us get this call-to-action book into the hands of all Americans. And do get active in correcting our nation. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.